looked like you had a turtleneck on, but it was just something around your collar.
Anybody in here remember Dickies?
Dickies. Yeah, nobody's that old. I doubt anybody is, but if anybody remembers that, I'll be surprised.
I love it. Well, guys,
it's very warm. It's, you know, it's like I'm in England, London or somewhere, you know, high style, high fashion.
Wilson Tennessee Vol over there on Instagram. I got your question. Thank you so much for that. We're going to get to that in just a second. Guys, if y'all have questions for Doc, go ahead and put it in, the comments. Look, it looks like Steve remembers the Dickies. Let's see here. Loved me a Dickie.
Yes, Steve probably does.
D. Lynn. Let's see. I know. Look, Rachel over from our Johnson City office loves the turtleneck.
Wow. Thank you.
Maybe this is a new thing. All right. Let's get rocking here. We got some questions to ask. Deborah, man, the Dickies are a hit tonight.
Yeah. Maybe we'll bring those back, you know.
All right. What we'll do here, guys, is we're going to go through a couple questions that came in throughout the weeks. Only a few came in, so we'll get to live questions here shortly. We'll take questions on anything health and wellness tonight. We're ready to answer for you guys. So if you have a question, go ahead and put that in the comments. I'm going to put this up from Robin. I think that's hysterical. Cousin Eddie, is that what a Dickie is?
Yeah, Cousin Eddie had one on Christmas vacation. He sure did. Yeah.
That's hysterical.
This is not a Dickie. This is just a turtleneck here, so it's a little different. But I doubt they even sell them. I'm going to look that up on Amazon and see if I could actually purchase one.
Yep. I love it.
I don't see the purpose of them, really, but, you know. Because it literally only fits around your neck. It's almost like a napkin type thing, but then it has the collar, you know, the high collar.
So theoretically, I can make this a Dickie.
You could wear one and look like you had a turtleneck on, but you only had a small piece of clothing on around your neck. That's what it was. But
we're going to get to some questions here. This first one's on migraines here. Thoughts on migraines. I have a friend who has had them all the time and her doctors don't seem to be helping. This is a common topic. And I know a little bit about your suggestions, but I want you to talk about this. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, very common, you know, a lot more common in females. A lot of them are hormonally related. A lot of them, have other triggers. But it may be headaches in general may be the most common reason for people coming in to see a doctor acutely. And migraines, certainly, they're very underdiagnosed. There's many different types of migraines. Have I done a podcast on migraines? If not, I need to do one.
I don't know. I will check, though.
But if I haven't, I need to do one specifically on migraine headaches because they're vascular headaches. Meaning the contraction of your arteries in your brain calls them. And they can have a lot of triggers anywhere from hormonal fluctuations to a perfume. Stress can cause them, lack of sleep. But typically they're one-sided throb. A lot of times they'll have an aura associated with them, meaning a precursor, like you may start seeing some spots before your eyes, and then a few minutes later, half hour later, you have a full-blown throbbing, nauseating headache that used to put people in bed. I mean, when I first came out of medical school, we used to have to give people Demerol for them and send them home with somebody. And then they came along with some really nice medicines. The first were the triptans that are still used. They're probably still the most commonly used medications, but now we have some new and better ones because the triptans like Imitrex, Zofran, Maxalt, they help, but in a lot of people they caused them tachycardia and, you know, it could be a little bit dangerous for people with heart disease. So then they came out with Nurtec and Ubrelvy, which is a whole different class of medications that seem to work great. I mean, I hand them out all the time. And I'm sure, but migraines are tough and there's a lot of things you can do about them. number one, try to find the trigger, whether it be hormonal, or whether it be a medicine or a vitamin or a supplement or lack of sleep or a particular smell. But typically, it depends on how many you get per month. If you're getting 7 to 8 a month, you need a prophylactic medication to try to help prevent them, not just treat them. Because we can treat them with various medications, including the new, not only the triptans, but the new Nurtec, Ubrelvy type stat medications. There's even a nose spray that works really well for that. Get the acute migraine out of your system. But there's also a lot of prophylactic medications. The first ones we used were really beta blockers. And then we came up with Topamax, which we use for a lot of different things. And now Ubrelvy, and we have other things we can do, like Botox injections. There's once a month shots. The most common one is called Emgality, that you give yourself a once a month subcutaneous shot. Very expensive if your insurance doesn't pay for them, but they tend to help a lot. Sometimes you got to just hit them from all directions. But so there's a lot of ways to go on this. There's many, many things you can do to treat and prevent these things. You don't necessarily have to go to a neurologist either for it. And again, hormones are a huge deal. A lot of times I'll just put people on progesterone, especially teenage girls that tend to, they usually come on, hormonal migraines come on in puberty and seem to be pretty bad with teenage females. A lot of times I'll just put them on a natural progesterone, and it really helps us, especially if it's associated with PMS or, premenstrual. But so there's a ton of stuff you can do. Headache diaries are good, where you write down what you've eaten that day that may have been a trigger. Certain foods can trigger it. How much sleep you got, what time of day it is, are you stressed? If you can do anything, get to the root cause of any disease or affliction, then you should do it. So do a headache diary when you go to your doctor to see if you can make some sense out of it and get a trigger. But they tend to run in families, no doubt about that. But there's a lot of medications we use. I haven't found any of the vitamins to be super helpful for severe migraines. They're really pretty common. So if anybody has any cool suggestions on what you can do, I mean, there's all kinds of homeopathic ways to do it too, but, I'm not sure for severe, headaches, if they work as well as the real medications. But interesting.
Let us know, guys, in the comments if you've had a migraine before and found something that has worked. The key thing I heard there, Doc, is finding the trigger. Is there any, like, is it like a journal? Do you journal it? Or
yeah, just journal. Yeah, you just write it. Just take a journal, a food journal, stress journal, sleep journal, just to see if you can make any sense out of it.
Yeah.
Definitely see your physician who's well-versed in treating migraines. There's some great medicines out there now for it, both to treat attacks and to use prophylactically.
Huge shout. Carter's in here. Carter, I can't wait to see you guys tomorrow. I'll be in JC. Terry, what's going on? Great to see you. One step forward. I see your question. Great question there around COVID. All right, we're going to get to this question. One, because this came up around, I think we were talking about metformin at some point, and this came in through email, and just wanted to know your thoughts on berberine and its usage. I know you're a fan. Can you just kind of tell everybody kind of the way you see berberine, how you're using it in office?
Yeah, just a natural product that kind of we use, kind of like we use metformin for diabetics or pre-diabetes. It just doesn't have the side effects. I think it works about as well as metformin without the GI side effects you see with metformin. But it's also not only good for, insulin resistance diabetes, it's really good for hypertension, hyperlipidemia. So, you know, I put two or three people on it today. It's great for insulin resistance. And a lot of people lose a little bit of weight on it, kind of like you would any, you know, medicine like that, like metformin or Ozempic. Is not an Ozempic type medicine, but in an offhanded way, it's almost related to the GLP-1 agonist. But so I really like berberine.
Is it something for that, that you add to a metformin or a GLP-1, or is in replacement?
You could take them together, but I usually just try to replace it. That's usually where I start out if somebody's just insulin resistant. And, you know, before I put them on metformin, I'll try berberine and see what kind of results. And, you know, put them on a glucose monitor like Andy talks about to see what pops their sugar up.
Okay.
But, yeah, I love berberine.
All right. Thank you for that question that came in through email. Those are the only two we got throughout the week. I'm going to do a quick double check here to make sure that I'm not missing any. I apologize if I have, guys. I see Instagram. Thank you, guys. We're going to get to those questions here. I see Linda's over there. Shout out to Linda. Let's see here. We're going to get back to the comments. Brandon, my brother. What's going on, Brandon? Do you have a question? Brandon, I know, has a question. Brandon, I know you got a question. He's been playing pickleball tonight.
I can believe it. I can believe it.
Okay, cool. I do have a question that came in through Instagram. We're going to get a few live questions first, and then we will get to that. Let's see here. Who wants to start? Let's go ahead and get to Rhonda on YouTube. Rhonda's saying, my son had a Cleveland done, and he came back positive for the MTHFR mutation. Had a low B12 and vitamin D. What would be the best thing for him to take to get his B12 back up? This is really timely. One, because, you know, in your podcast episode with Michael, talking about the customized vitamins, the Dr. Rogers formulas, you talk a little bit about the MTHFR mutation with the methyl B vitamins that are in the super vitamin that I know you're super pumped about, and everyone in our offices as well. What's your thoughts here for Rhonda?
Yeah, you know, it's very common to have a methylation problem and a mutation on the MTHFR gene. Probably at least a third of people have at least one mutation. A lot of it depends on how I approach it, if which one you have. If it's a 677TT or the 1298A or C. So there's several different variances. I'll look at the homocysteine level, and, you know, I'll treat that, because a lot of times it'll be elevated, which is an inflammatory marker that's important, probably as important or more important than your cholesterol is. But in any event, so it depends on what the homocysteine is. People that have the mutation for MTHFR usually have low B12 and low folate and low B6. So the vitamin D has nothing to do with the MTHFR. So definitely put him on some vitamin D, without a doubt. But to get the B12 back up, you just need to start giving him B12 supplementations, methyl B12, not cyanocobalamin, methyl cobalamin. Sometimes we do it with injections to get the levels up quickly if they're really tired. But most of the time we just put them on an oral B12 that works just well, and make sure he's getting methylfolate and also B6. So methylated B complex is very helpful, and it's easy to get it back up. You know, unless, you know, some people don't do well with an oral B12. When you swallow, they put it under their tongue and it's more absorbable. So some people that have absorption problems won't uptake it through their stomach. Folate and B6 don't seem to have that problem. But so a lot of times I use the sublingual B12. A lot of times I'll pop them with a shot when they first come in and get them going, and then just put them on an oral. But it's easy to get back up. It's not it's a very common mutation that can be treated easily. Just glad you got the Cleveland test done so we could identify it. It'll help his chances for his whole life if he takes these methylated vitamins. He just lacks the ability to convert folic acid into methylfolate, the active form of B9, which is so important. So that methylation cycle is really important. You know, go to try looking at my podcast on, or Robin does a great job of it too. She probably explains it better than I do, on the MTHFR gene. So I'm glad you know that. Anybody that hadn't had that done, you need to check it.
Yep.
It's and important.
I'll reiterate that. If you, Rhonda, if you or anyone in here who is either knows they have this gene mutation, the MTHFR, or wants or needs to know, if you search on YouTube MTHFR and Robin Riddle, it'll be the first video that comes up. Same thing if you search for MTHFR, Tom Rogers. We have a couple different videos on the Performance Medicine YouTube channel around that mutation, as well as the Cleveland Heart panel. So, Rhonda, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for that question. And real quick here, I'm going to put this up kind of throughout the night. We're trying to build up this online store, the Dr. Rogers Vitamins. They're now available online, performancemedicine.net/shop. Beautiful graphic there from our team. Thank you guys for that. And also, if you want to learn more about what's in these vitamins and why we believe they are the best out there, no fillers, great sourcing. Check out this episode with Michael Loomis. He does a great job of explaining kind of the ins and outs of choosing supplements. So thanks to Michael for that. Let's see here. I want to put this up just because this came across my peripherals. I just thought this was funny.
Oh, this is a Trump interview.
We might lose Doc.
Hey, Deborah? Don't you have, you can record it, can't you?
So to all the people in here tonight, thank y'all for hanging out with us this evening. I know there's a Tennessee basketball game on as well. So thank you guys for hanging out. I'm going to go over to Instagram. Thank you guys who are hanging out with us over there. I don't know how to put up this question, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it to you, Doc, so it won't be up on the screen. And this is from Wilson Tennessee Vol on Instagram. The question is, does methylene blue raise blood sugar? Does methylene blue raise blood pressure?
No, I haven't found it to be a problem. We've looked at that. It definitely will give you energy. But, you know, I won't say it possibly couldn't. I mean, I saw a patient today that they thought testosterone raised their blood pressure a little bit. I think it's the only time I've ever seen that. So when they got off of it, it went back down. So it's possible, but that's rare. Just keep an eye on it. With anything you take, like I was explaining to a lot of my patients today, there's a risk benefit, you know, but usually something like that, the risk are tiny, especially compared to the benefits. But good question.
Yeah.
So, you know, start out, you know, you're worried about if you have unstable hypertension, you know, you might look at it closer and maybe start out with half the dose, just to kind of feel it out a little bit. But I haven't found that to affect blood pressures.
I'm going to put this up. Thank you, Wilson Tennessee Vol over there. I'm going to put this up here because it's a follow-up from Rhonda. He was told his body can't make B12. This was the context around having the MTHFR mutation. Is that accurate? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, nobody can make B12. You know, it's a matter of getting it absorbed from what you eat. So
it's absorption.
Yeah,
Rhonda.
It's absorption probably. Yeah. There's a thing called intrinsic factor that some people have if they've had stomach issues, especially like a gastric bypass, or back when they used to treat ulcers with surgery, they lack this intrinsic factor that helps absorb B12. But yeah, he needs just to take B12. You know, his body's not going to make it.
Thank you, Rhonda, for putting that in there. I'm going to go to Barbara over on Facebook. Thank you for hanging out with us, Barbara, tonight. Hello, just curious, what type of food do folks eat on a typical day while on Ozempic? Lots of fasting. I know this is a very common question you're getting in office. Before you answer, Doc, if there's anybody in here tonight who's you know, on Ozempic or one of the GLP-1s and have found something that's really worked well for them, let us know what kind of what you're eating, what's working for you. What's your thoughts on this, Doc?
You know, I just said, because you're on Ozempic, you know, you either want to lose weight or you're diabetic or pre-diabetic. So low carb, you know, just a low carb diet is the main thing. There's two things I tell everybody that just wants to lose weight. Two things you really need to look at is one, eat less carbs, eat less in general. You don't need to eat that much. Eat less carbs for sure. And do intermittent fasting, you know, that's just a good way. That's the way our bodies are kind of made, you know. If you want to use your own fat to for energy, then you'll do some fasting. And it's really helpful to do a longer fast once every week or so. I think it's great. You know, last week when we met with Dr. Osborne in Palm Beach, he was on a fasting day. He fasts once a week and, you know, for 24 hours. Maybe not quite that, but pretty close to it. So, yeah, fasting is good. Let's put it that way. You don't have to go for days on end, but just intermittent fasting is easy. So, but just eat low carb. Make sure you get plenty of nutritious food, you know, that's not high glycemic. And it's just what I would tell anybody, eat clean, you know, avoid processed foods. Pay attention to what your gut does, how it digests your food. So, you know, eat the meat, but not the bread. Eat vegetables, eat some fruits, you know, just if you have insulin resistance, just avoid the high glycemic fruits like bananas and grapes, that type of thing.
It's a great question, Barbara. Thank you so much for putting that in there. I know a lot of people are thinking the exact same thing. What's a normal day look like? I would add just, you know, focusing on the protein. Make sure that, because I know there is some muscle loss involved, and we're encouraging people.
Can be. So make sure you get your protein in and good fats.
Yep. Thank you, Barbara, for putting that in there. I'm going to go back over to Instagram. We got a great question from Ventana. Great to see you, Ventana. Which hormones, nutrient/vitamins should one test for thinning hair in menopausal women?
Great question. Of course, thyroid. Need to check a ferritin level as well. And hormones. Those are the basic ones, you know, to check. Plus cortisol. Cortisol has a little something to do with it. But as well as your vitamin panel that we do on the, and your omega fatty acid breakdown that we do on the Cleveland panel. But in general, hair loves estrogens. So look at your hormones, because your hair can get thin without estrogen. Hair is really fond of estrogen, not so fond of testosterone, but there's ways to get around that because females need testosterone as well. So yeah, in females, if we can't get your hair thicker, I'd have a hard time believing that. But look at all those tests we're talking about. A simple Cleveland will cover all that.
Ventana, I hope that helps. Great question there. Thank you for putting that in around thinning hair. I'll kind of reiterate, it's the Cleveland Heart Panel, or I also heard just a simple thyroid panel and a ferritin level will do the trick.
And there's a lot of ways to treat thinning hair. We have our own hair vitamin that works really well. Look at Andy's hair after he started taking it. It's amazing. But plus there's some other things we use. So we should be able to thicken your hair up.
Great question there. Okay, we're going to go back over to, let's go to YouTube here, TT Warrior 1. Thank you for being here. I also see there's a Facebook group I want to put up there for people who have this. Any recommendations for restless legs? I've tried it all, even likely what you will recommend. Doctors have been no help. I do take Pramixol?
Yeah.
Pramipexole.
That's
but barely
that's
helps.
Something that is used for Parkinson's, but I also use it for restless legs. That's kind of the go-to drug for that. But some people take iron and it helps with restless legs. That's kind of outside the box. I'm sure you're taking magnesium. You know, sometimes I'll even use prescription Klonopin at night if you just can't sleep. I mean, I've seen people take everything from methadone to heavy duty medications. I'm not sure if you tried all those or not, but if you haven't tried a little iron, try that. And make sure you get something like a Cleveland to look at all your levels of everything. But there should be some help. I've even used medicines like gabapentin for it. Sometimes helps.
This just came through, and I Luana, make sure I believe you're talking about with for restless leg, because I know there's a bunch of different types of magnesium. When you talk about restless,
I usually like a combination of 3 and 8, glycinate, malate. That's usually what I use as a combo. That's our magnesium, has those three types in it. And, you know, unless you're constipated and need mag citrate, mag succinate, I like those three particular. There's even one, you know, magnesium with potassium. If you tend to have sweat a lot, may be predisposed to have low potassium, which could be a factor. I would try that one as well. A good question.
Thank you for that, TT Warrior One. And I'm going to put this up here for anyone who's struggling with restless leg. There is a group on Facebook. It's a very, you know, it's probably more common than I realize. So thank you, TT Warrior One, for putting this in there. Seems to be a lot of support. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a patient who actually goes to a support group here in town.
Really?
Yeah. There's a support group. They meet once a month.
Bianca, are you seeing those? The ones that I'm not putting up are from our, we're also live on Instagram, and I just cannot for the life of me figure out how to put those up on the screen. So are you guys seeing when I put up a question besides the Instagram questions? I will have to kind of verbalize those, but I want to get your feedback, because what I can do is type those in and get those up there, because I know it kind of helps to see what we're talking about. Okay, let's go to, let's see here, where am I at? Let's get to my brother Steve here. My friend is losing his long-term memory. Do you still recommend Cognitex, which of course is from Life Extension? Is it good for that? Have you heard of taking galantamine to help with that? What works? What's your thoughts on this, Doc?
I can't remember. I knew Steve would find that funny.
That was actually, honestly, that was hysterical. That was.
Yeah. Ben doesn't think I'm funny.
I thought that was really
funny. Ben and Katie think I have no sense of humor at all. But I thought that was pretty good.
That was funny. That was funny.
Okay. usually we see people losing their short-term memory. It's kind of unusual to lose the long-term memory. And if that happens, I definitely want to get a neurologic workup, because that's not real typical. Yeah, I like Cognitex. It's a really good, you know, it has pregnenolone, phosphatidylcholine, phosphatidylserine. There's another one that's not in Cognitex, but it's called Bacopa that I like a lot. May try it out. It's interesting. As short-term memory is fine, but as long-term, I don't see that quite as much. I've heard of taking galantamine with it, but I haven't noticed it to be that helpful. They need a neuro workup to see kind of what's going on. They need an MRI brain just to kind of see, more of what's going on with that, especially if they're having any kind of odd behaviors or anything. Always look at hormone levels too, vitamin levels, gut function. Talking to Steve, gut function is important. So
you're saying Cognitex would not help for long term?
I'm saying it may help, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Steve, it's worth a try. It's worth a try.
Yeah. Steve, I hope that helps, man. We're going to keep moving. See over on Instagram, Lau Sullivan. Yes, we are. We're in East Tennessee. We've got offices in two offices in Knoxville, and then the Tri-Cities, Kingsport, Bristol, and Johnson City. Thank you for hanging out with us. Shout out to the Tri-Cities. I see a couple of Tri-Cities people over there on Instagram. Okay, let's keep going here. Let's go to One Step Forward over on YouTube. I am positive for COVID. They sent me in the Paxlovid, but did not give me an antibiotic. My drainage is not clear, and I have a bad headache. Could this be from COVID, or do you think I have infection? We'll keep this, in our lane here, Doc.
What do you think? I'm going to give a soliloquy on COVID or anything, or the jab, or what?
That doesn't sound like you at all.
No, I've never done that. I don't like Paxlovid. I just don't like it too much. It's just, you know, they've kind of proven that you can't give it in large doses enough to kill the virus because it's toxic. I mean, you'll find that out from the extremely bad taste in your mouth. So unless you're, you know, in a nursing home on your last legs and ask me for it, then I would write it for you, but which I have. But I don't prefer it, especially if you're a fairly healthy person. I would just follow the protocol. I would take Zithromax, which I'm going to tell you a funny story about in a second. Get on the high-dose vitamins. Get on the word that we get in trouble for using. I use the code word ice cream for it, but it's that dewormer that they talk about. I love it. I think it works for that a lot of stuff. But so, yeah, I wouldn't do it. You know, I just, unless you have a lot of risk factors and you're really sick with it. This mutation is just not getting, you know, it's not killing people too much unless they're on their last legs anyway. Just like the flu could kill you. As a matter of fact, the flu is way worse than COVID now. But so now the thing about Paxlovid, you know, you get this rebound about, you know, a third of the time. I think, you know, they'll say it's less than that, but in my experience, it's about a third of the time you may get a little better. Then 2 weeks later, you have it all over again. You get a rebound. You know, that's what happened to our dear president and the other dear doctor that ran our COVID protocols for us, both of them that happened to. But the antibiotic, yeah, you know, I've always thought that Zithromax had some great antiviral properties. And I think COVID did prove that. If you're getting a headache, especially in the front of your face, you're probably getting a sinus infection with it. So yeah, get on a Z-Pack. And a funny story I was going to tell you about Z-Pack, because I've always suspected that Zithromax works for viruses. And here's why. Because this is for years. I've seen this years and years and years. Somebody comes in with a 1 or 2 day cold, and you know what you're sure is a virus. And you give them a Z-Pack because they want it. I want it. I've done it with myself. Sore throat, take a Z-Pack, and I'm better in a day or two. If I don't, a week later, I'll be on a Z-Pack because I've got a rip-roaring sinus infection or bronchitis. So, you know, and I don't worry too much about, there is some antibiotic resistance. I don't worry too much about it. You know, there's other heavy hitters if you need them. But so that's what I would do. And I follow the protocol, the high dose, you know, vitamins, of quercetin, you know, that realm of things, look at the protocol. But in any event, this is a funny story about Zithromax. It's a dog story. It has to do with my dog, Izzy, who you may see tonight. But anyway, she developed this big wart that kept getting bigger on her gum, right on her gum. And it was very obvious wart. So I told Jenny to take her to the vet, you know, it needs to be cut off, you know, because it's really big. And anyway, so she takes her to the vet, and I come home that night, and I said, did they take the wart off Izzy's gum line? And she says, no, she gave me she said it was a wart, obviously caused by a virus, and that there's a medicine for it to take. So the vet had called the medicine in, and I went down to the pharmacy and picked it up. It's Zithromax. And I'm going, I wish I'd have known this. You know, yeah. I had Zithromax in my office, you know. So it was Zithromax, and I'm thinking, I even told you, I said, there's no way this is going to work for a wart. And so I had it. So, you know, it's once a day for 10 days, one pill, 100 milligrams. So sure enough, it worked. I couldn't believe it. That thing is gone. And I was just dumbfounded. So maybe it's another proof that Dithromax worked for a virus. But isn't that crazy? That Has anybody else heard about that? I couldn't believe it. I don't know if it works in human warts or not, but if I get a wart, I'm going to try it. But that was crazy. It was a large wart. I thought there's no way this thing will have to be cut off.
If you've tried that with your dogs, let us know. That's the first I've heard of that.
But it's gone in 30 days. Gone. I kept looking at it, and it kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Even after a week, it was like, man, it's got to be crazy. But anyway.
That is wild.
True story.
One step forward. Thank you so much for that question. Keep us posted on how you're doing. Let's see here. Let's go to Kristen. This is around, I think, thyroid. I'm going to read it for you here. On and off trouble going to the bathroom. My Arbor from Fran at the JC office is working awesome for all my other ailments, including weight loss, but that's the one thing still bother me. Try magnesium citrate, but doesn't always work. Any supplement or suggestions? And I'm going to put this up here from Kristen. This was a problem long before the Armor or anything else. Is magnesium citrate the one you would use for this sort of thing? Okay.
Well, yeah, I think I would start there, you know, but certainly we have a supplement called Dr. Schultz's Intestinal Formula Number 1 that's awesome. Put somebody today on it. And you can, if one doesn't work, go to 2, 3, even 4. I have one person that takes 5, it works perfect. Take it with supper, start with 1, go to 2 if it doesn't work. But I love Dr. Schultz's formula.
Okay.
Drink a lot of water, exercise, do all the other things. And there's a solution to that.
Okay.
There has got to be.
Kristen, I hope that helps. Dr. Schultz, let's see here. Let's keep going. I think this is one. Oh, cool. That's from Kathy over on Facebook. I understand that long COVID especially affects the bifido gut bacteria.
Bifido.
Sorry if I botched that, Kathy. If you are already having excessive air, gas, and abdominal discomfort, can the digestive shield make that worse, particularly with the other ingredients? Okay.
Usually it helps it. You know, I've had maybe one person that said they had more gas with it, but it didn't work for them. But one out of thousands. I mean, yeah, because it has digestive enzymes in it. It has lactase to block down dairy. Has chitosan, which blocks down lectins and glutens, and it has a great mix of 11 probiotics. It has prebiotics, so that's my go-to, as you know, for the gut. But yeah, I mean, long COVID can really affect your gut bacteria, not just bifido, but lacto, a lot of them. And gosh, the second time I had COVID, you know, it was like a 2-day cold. But it really got to my gut, as you know, I've talked about it in the past. And at the time, it was like the perfect storm because I'd torn some cartilage in my knee, had to get on some steroids, and I took an antibiotic to the COVID and really messed my gut up for a while. And I went through a lot of different testing, had a lot of weight loss with it, et cetera. I mean, it took a while. So, it can really mess your gut microbiome up. So you definitely need to look at it because, again, one of the most common things we see with long COVID is brain fog. You have that gut-brain connection, so it's very interrelated. That vagal nerve is so important. But long COVID can cause a lot of fatigue, shortness of breath on exertion. So long COVID is treatable. Of course, try digestive shields. You probably have to take 2 a day for sure, maybe 3 a day, but, clean your diet up. And a lot of you may not need, like some people that have a lot of gas and bloating, they do worse when they take something like fiber, you know, if they're eating a lot of raw vegetables or they're even if they're taking Metamucil, it can make it worse. So I like it for that. You might also try some Gas X, you know, that'll help, excessive air. Avoid, you know, certain foods and beverages that are carbonated. And some people swallow a lot of air too, I find, because of anxiety. But yeah, certainly could. If you continue to have gut problems, you might want to get a GI map with Robin. Yeah, try it and see what the combination. If it goes on long, you need to get with us and we'll look at your, you know, your microbiome and see what's going on. You could have SIBO. I think it really, in my case, I think it kicked off a term called microscopic colitis. Yep. I'm pretty sure that's what I had. Ended up having to get a colonoscopy for it, which was normal, but I wish they'd have biopsied it because it's going to look normal. Microscopic. But Ben, did you have a question from last week that pertained to gut? Let's go ahead. You told me, because I didn't know. I didn't know how to answer that a couple weeks ago. What was that?
I'm going to type this in real quick. I'm looking at it. It's from a couple weeks ago. And the question is around what are...
Just type the one word, acromansia. Yep. Yeah, just type that one word, because I didn't really know about it. I wasn't versed with it, but if you can type that one word to let everybody know what it is, because it's a gut bacteria. As long as we're talking about it, we'll try to answer that, because I did look it up,
and I hope it is.
Okay, right. Yeah. You spelled it right, I think. Acromansia, I guess the way you pronounce it, but yeah, you know, I researched it a little bit, and it is a product. It's a probiotic that some people take, really, and it's kind of one you need to know about, because a lot of people shouldn't be taking this one. Really, it's kind of a unique probiotic. In that particular species of bacteria, I think it's a gram-negative anaerobe, is in some... You know, it's in some guts naturally, probably most guts naturally. And it's even a small component of most kombuchas. But the thing about it is it's probably going to be used more for metabolic syndrome, people that have problems with lipids and diabetes or insulin resistance, hypercholesterolemia, because it really kind of breaks down sugars and lipids, but it also breaks down that mucinous barrier. I think they called it a mucinolytic. So it breaks down the mucinous layer that you need to protect your gut lining. And so some people may need that because, you know, they have metabolic syndrome, but I don't think your average person really needs to take it. Certainly for somebody with IBS, it can make it a lot worse, because if you lose that mucinous barrier, and Steve he can probably comment on this too, but or Robin, but if you break down that mucinous barrier, the integrity that, you know, one cell thickness layer between your large intestine and your bloodstream, then you get leaky gut. You know, you can get inflammatory changes. And in reading it, there's a lot of warnings about it, as far as, you know, making inflammation worse, maybe causing colitis, maybe making colon cancer worse, or predisposing you to this, kind of like colitis can. But so be careful with it. You know, I'm not familiar with the doses they use, but it is advertised some. And it's just the reason I didn't know about it, I guess, is because, you know, I just don't use it. You know, really, you know, we have other things that can control metabolic syndrome. So that's an interesting little question, though, and I'm glad I looked into it.
Yeah. And that's, you know,
do your research before you start taking it.
Yeah. And I'm really glad they came to the show with the question around that, because really that's what we want this hour every week to be about. If you're not sure about something, put it in the comments. We'll give, you know, kind of our two cents on it. Because sometimes, you know, you think something's going to do something and it ends up having like the opposite effect. So thank you for sending that in around acromantia. It also kind of, it's fun for us to kind of do the research prior to. So So thank you for that. Thanks, Doc, for reminding me around getting that topic back up. I'm going to get to Roel here. Doctor, a family member just found out she has lupus. Any words of wisdom? I feel like there was another lupus question in the past couple weeks. Any wisdom here?
Well, it's a systemic autoimmune disease. You know, if she's symptomatic, a lot of people have a barely positive ANA, and they call it lupus when it really isn't lupus. It's just some kind of inflammation. So just because she has an ANA that's positive, maybe the low titer, it's really not lupus. Most of the time it's not. But if she has, you know, a really high titer and she has seen a rheumatologist and, you know, symptomatic, then, you know, she probably does have lupus then. And, you know, they use various medications for it. The main thing, you know, it's a systemic disease and can affect a lot of things. You don't have to have that typical butterfly rash of the face, but it's an autoimmune disease that, like we're talking about the gut, I always say, look at your gut. You know, usually your gut kicks off something like this. So take care of your gut, make sure, and I bet you anything she's having gut problems. You know, so you look at that really close. You do a GI map or something like that to find out, you know, what her microbiome looks like. Look at kidney function. Certainly do everything else that you can to tamp down inflammation, because it's an inflammatory disease. It looks like most of these autoimmune diseases. So gut function, great diet, monitor, you know, blood markers, especially looking at kidneys. I don't know if she has any joint involvement or not, but I like low-dose naltrexone.
Yeah.
Love it. Love low-dose. Have her look that up. Works great. I'll use it a lot for that and lupus. So hopefully she has a mild, maybe, case of it. Keep us informed if there's anything else we can advise you on. You know, because they're using some fancy new medicines for this. And you probably, if she definitely has it, probably ought to be following with a rheumatologist to kind of see. But those are hopefully words of wisdom.
Roel, thank you for putting that in there. And you know, we've done a couple videos around LDN if you want to check those out for her. So
I have a patient that I saw last week that, and it's usually females that get lupus, and she has had lupus for a decade, lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, you know, in her 40s, otherwise healthy. She didn't want it. She took methotrexate, didn't really agree with her, and Plaquenil. So she wanted to get off of them. And so I put her on LDN, and she's, for a year, she hasn't had any symptoms at all. Off of the heavy hitters, just on LDN. Saw her last week.
That is wild. We had a you talked with our pharmacist buddy in Kingsport who got on LDN and it changed his life. Dr. Markham, and check that out. If you search for low dose naltrexone and performance medicine or Tom Rogers, you'll find it. It's pretty wild. Some of the results that we're getting from LDN. I want to keep moving here. Let's see. Coal miner's daughter, thank you so much for being here tonight. Great to see you. I see our operations manager, Katie's in here. Katie, what's going on? Great to see you. I'm looking forward to being up in the Tri-Cities with you guys tomorrow. I'm going to put this up from Velma. Thank you, Velma, for this. Do you recommend Solgar 7 for inflammation? And can it be taken with other prescribed medications? This is the second time I've seen Solgar. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like that one. You know, I had a patient tell me about it, and, you know, I actually tried it myself, and I think it kind of helps. I mean, it's all natural. Yeah, you can certainly take it along with it. You know, it has a lot of, it's all herbal, has a good dose of turmeric in it and all. And, but yeah, I don't see any contraindication with any medicine that other inflammatory medications. So, yeah, try it.
Thank you, Velma, for that. I'm going to put this up from Robin in regards to LDN. LDN can also be great for fertility.
Great point.
Yeah,
great
thank you point. For that, Robin. Robin, of course, specializes in functional fertility. So so thank you for putting that in there for
us. Got some great Robin. Protocols, wonderful protocols.
Okay, let's go to, let's see, where am I? I'm going to go to, it seems we have a, just around IBS, a lot of IBS questions tonight. This is awesome. Allison asking, do you have any diet advice for someone that has both IBS and is lactose intolerant?
Hey, Allison. Yeah, I mean, of course, you're going to have to avoid dairy products. Mm-hmm. You may be able to eat some fermented cheeses. I definitely have lactose intolerance myself. And they kind of go together. I think a lot of times IBS is lactose intolerance and a gluten sensitivity. That's one, I think they're so interrelated that, you know, and certainly can kick it off. But yeah, you got to stay away from inflammatory foods, which means sugars, dairy, glutens. And of course, wheat is in glutens. But also I'd watch out for corn and soy, and maybe possibly nightshade vegetables. Yeah. That's something a lot of people don't think about. They can be very inflammatory for a lot of people, like peppers and eggplant and onions. Not really a, I don't think it's really a nightshade. It's a relish, but onions are actually pretty good. I need to do a podcast on onions, how good they are for you. Some people don't tolerate them in their gut, but even white potatoes are nightshade vegetables, believe it or not. So a lot of people don't realize that. When they cut them out, they start getting better. And certainly Digest Shield's my go-to there. You need protection with that. But, and you know, depending on your weight and all, just, I really think you should probably be taking something like, you know, Perfect Aminos. So that way you make sure you get enough adequate nutrition and you get the 8 essential amino acids, that's one of my standby. I do it every day.
Super so, interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe even some people do a food sensitivity test. You know, a lot of times you'll have a delayed food sensitivity. And 2 days after you eat something, boom, you got IBS symptoms, you know, or a rash or something, or you feel brain fog. And you can't correlate it because you ate it 2 days ago. It's a delayed sensitivity. It's not like a true IgE-mediated allergy. So it's not like eating peanut butter and having a reaction like that. It's delayed, so you don't have a clue. So sometimes a Dunwoody, you know, or a blood test is pretty helpful to look at those foods you're really sensitive to. You may be really surprised.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times it's the same foods you really love and you eat a lot of.
Allison, thank you so much for this question. I hope that helps. We're going to keep going here. Heather, it's so good to see you. We love you back. Thank you for being here with us tonight. Let's see. Heather's question is, elevated homocysteine levels in so many patients. Treatment plan. Heather, of course, is a practitioner in Georgia. So thank you, Heather, for being with us tonight. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, great question. You know, I check that on everybody. It's part of our Cleveland panel. But look at their MTHFR status. You know, that homocysteine methionine, people that have an MTHFR mutation can't recycle methionine from homocysteine. So their homocysteine blood levels get high and it causes inflammation, increased chance of blood clots, miscarriages, heart attacks, strokes, everything bad. So, of course, the methylated B vitamins, especially B12, methyl B12, methyl folate, they can't tolerate folic acid. They may think they're getting folate, but they're getting folic acid, which is toxic to them. And I'm proof pudding right there because I have it. And of course, let's say B6, methyl folate, B6, and methyl cobalamin, but also like TMG, trimethyl glycine. That's a really good one for that. And those are what I usually use, and it usually works. You know, there's some formulations or prescription that you can get that has all of them together, but they tend to be kind of expensive. But Pidopin maybe or one of those. But anyway, those are the main ones. And it may take a little while, you know, 3 months or so to bring it down, but certainly follow it and see how they're doing on that. That's a great question.
Thank you, Heather, for putting that in there. Let's get to one. I want to put this up from Larry. That's very sweet, Larry. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, Larry.
Great to
Larry.
See you.
Great guy.
Great to see you. We're going to put this up from Roel. Doctor, have you ever used a gamma core with your patients or used the vagus nerve stimulator like the one sold on Amazon? So this is around the vagus nerve.
I haven't used a gamma core, but Ernie, our physical therapist in our Kingsport office, certainly uses the vagus nerve stimulator. So yeah, I like them. You know, they really work well. They work really well in post-COVID patients. Mm. So yeah, I'm all for them. You know, I don't know, you know, they just stimulate that vagal nerve, which is so important. Yep. With guts, brains, you know, the vagus nerve touches all your organs, internal organs. So, hopefully we've done a podcast on the vagal nerve, haven't I?
We have.
Not, I need to do one.
We have, but I did check. We have not done one on migraines. So our team will we'll write that down.
Put that in the pipeline.
We need to do that. I'm going to put this up here from Kylie. This is awesome. Thank you for putting this in there. Paxlovid works best with 12,000 mg liposomal vitamin C daily until 2 days after recovery. Thank you for putting that in there. I hope I forget who it was, but we did get a Paxlovid question tonight. So thank you, Kylie, for putting that in there for us.
Vitamin C is great. I tell people when they come down with COVID or flu, take a gram of vitamin C every hour while you're awake.
Yeah.
And really, you'll start to feel better.
Lisa here on Facebook. Any suggestions on how to get rid of thyroid nodules and what causes them to develop?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of time you can have a goiter, you know, it's your thyroid trying to work harder. So it hypertrophies and sometimes it forms nodules. Most of them are benign, but definitely do an ultrasound to make sure that, you know, there's nothing suspicious going on with them, like a malignancy. But usually it's inflammation that causes them. A lot of times scarring because the thyroid's trying to work harder and it's septated. So that's why it tends to form the nodules, kind of like you would form. I would correlate that to cellulite being septated, these fibrous bands separate and they turn into nodules. That's my theory. Anyway, because the gland is kind of, if you've ever felt one on, you know, dissections, they feel kind of lumpy anyway. So get it assessed first. Look at your thyroid function test. And if you have any hint of, you know, a suboptimal thyroid function, putting some on thyroid medication helps. Check antibodies to make sure you don't have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. If you do, always use selenium and zinc. But it just depends on, you know, what they look like on ultrasound. Sometimes they need to be biopsied. But usually the radiologists are really good at telling you which ones do look suspicious that you need biopsy. And I had one that came back today, you know, no biopsy needed, no further even screening needed ever. So that was good to know.
Yeah.
So make sure what they are first and then optimize your thyroid function. And, I think vitamin E a lot of times will help. And staying off caffeine as well, kind of like I would do for fibrocystic breast. But great question.
Lisa, thank you so much for that. I hope that helps a little bit. We're going to go to Carla here. Thank you, Carla, for being with us tonight. What's the best way to lower inflammation? Obviously, we talk about inflammation all the time. There's, it feels like a lot of different things can lower inflammation. What's kind of...
Look at the gut first. You know, look at what you eat. That's the most important thing by far. stay away from inflammatory foods like sugars, the ones I just mentioned, gluten, dairy, corn, soy in this country. Those are terribly inflammatory foods. You know, stay away from processed foods as well. They have a lot of chemicals in them that cause inflammation. I mean, it's unbelievable what they put in a lot of these foods. It should be illegal. It's illegal in most other countries, what they put in them. So the gut, you know, but other ways too, or avoid stress if you can, keep it down, get a good night's sleep, exercise, which causes inflammation short term, but lowers inflammation long term. Sweat, getting an infrared sauna, use a red light. Those are all great for inflammation. Using turmeric, supplements that decrease inflammation are good. MSM, those are good ways to do it, I think.
Carla, thank you so much. Guys, this
sometimes the adrenal adaptogens like ginseng, ashwagandha, rhodiola, L-theanine, they help as well.
Speaking of that, you talk a little bit about the ashwagandha, L-theanine, and saffron, of course, which is in our stress formula. I do want to put this quick plug in, guys. We do have our online vitamin store up. What we've been selling in office for the past couple of years now, you can now get online. You can see it at the bottom there, performancemedicine.net/shop. You'll find all these right there, the Dr. Rogers formulas, a lot of which we have talked about tonight. We're continuing to work on the shop and add to it, but it is up and functional. We're super pumped about it. We'd love for you guys to check it out. Doc, man, this has been awesome. What a great show.
We're back at it. We missed last week. Unfortunately, we're in airplanes and down in Florida also, so we couldn't coordinate it. So we appreciate people that having patience with us, and we'll be here every week. And I hope to get Andy on here again at some point, maybe once a month if he can.
Andy will be back soon.
He's currently in his acting gig right now, so he's in a play right now.
Are you going Thursday night?
Yeah. That's his birthday, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Thursday is Andy's birthday, and he's doing I think it's a family and friend night for the show that at the Jonesboro Repertory Theater. I'm pumped to be going here in the next couple weeks to see him, see his show. So huge shout out to
I think it's sold out.
I think it has. Yeah. Guys, we love y'all so much. For y'all to hang out with us, during this hour, every single week means the world to me, means the world to my dad. We appreciate you guys. Thank y'all for the wonderful questions that come in throughout the week, as well as the ones that come into, live during the show. Y'all make this show great. So thank y'all so much. Dad, I appreciate you, man. This has been awesome.
Thank you, Ben.
All right.
Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow. Tri-Cities offices. I'll be there here shortly. Shout out to everybody on our team. All of our offices, Kingsport, Johnson City, Bristol, West Knoxville, Fountain City. We love y'all so much, and thank you all to the team. I know a lot of y'all are with us tonight in the live show. Pop, love you, man.
Love you. All right. See you tomorrow.
See you guys. We are looking for my outro. Where's that? Yeah, check out that shop, guys. Come on, check out the vitamins. Don't go away.